Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. In celebration of Martin Luther King Day, we'll hear a talk by Alveda King, the niece of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., pastoral associate and director of African American Outreach for Priests for Life and Gospel of Life Ministries, the voice of Silent No More Awareness Campaign, and author of several books, including King Rules, 10 Truths for You, Your Family, and Our Nation to Prosper, How Can the Dream Survive If We Murder the Children? And I Don't Want Your Men, I Want My Own. Dr. King's appearance was co-sponsored by Creighton University Students for Life. She'll speak on the topic, How Can the Dream Survive? This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday evening, October 27, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Creighton University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. The daughter of the late civil rights activist, Reverend A.D. King, and his wife, Naomi Barber King, Alveda grew up in the civil rights movement, led by her uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Her family home in Birmingham, Alabama, was bombed, as was her father's church office in Louisville, Kentucky. Alveda was jailed during the open housing movement. She sees the pro-life movement as a continuation of the civil rights struggle. Dr. King is an accomplished actress and songwriter, the founder of Alveda King Ministries, and is the recipient of an honorary Doctor of Laws degree from St. Anselm College. She has served on several boards, including Heartbeat International, Georgia Right to Life, the Martin Luther King Center, Bible Curriculum in Public Schools, and Abortion Recovery International. She is also a member of the National Black Pro-Life Coalition and is a senior fellow with the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society. Dr. King is a regular columnist for Newsmax.com Insider Section. Here now to speak on How Can the Dream Survive in celebration of Martin Luther King Day is Alveda King.
I usually start my presentations with a very brief video of my new book, King Rules, and then I go through the 10 rules and focusing specifically on Chapter 4, which is Defend Life. We do have books, Priest for Life has it available, already autographed for you. So I do hope that you will go by and see that. I am Dr. Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as many people know. And my father, his brother, Reverend Alfred Daniel Williams King, Reverend A.D. King. I'm here to greet Students for Life tonight, and it's so wonderful to be here with you. So I work as Director of African American Outreach for Priest for Life. I've been there for 9 years. It's been an exciting time. I met Father Frank Pavone in New York at a Right to Life conference about 1998 or 1999. When Father Pavone and I met, we were speaking at a conference, and he was quoting my uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And as he was quoting Dr. King from the letter from a Birmingham jail, how many of you are familiar with that, have read it, heard it, studied it? Sometimes students are invited to study that in school. It still remains a very profound letter, even though it's pretty, you know, it's been several decades since he wrote it. One particular passage in there that struck a chord with me, and he said, "Don't be like the Romans who committed infanticide." And I thought about it. I was pro-life, of course, by that time. But don't be like the Romans who committed infanticide, the killing of the newborn babies and sometimes the way babies in the wombs of their mothers. So as my uncle was talking about infanticide, invading really the civil rights of little babies in the womb and or ones who were born soon after. And I said, my goodness, you sound kind of like the things that I learned as I was growing up. And we talked, or we remarked on it. Many people thought that my uncle endorsed Planned Parenthood, because in 1966, Planned Parenthood offered him the Margaret Sanger Award, the Maggie Award. Now, he didn't accept that award. A lot of people don't know that. His wife was pro-choice, just like Mrs. Barbara Bush and Mrs. Laura Bush are pro-choice. Their husbands have been president of the United States. They're pro-life, but their wives are pro-choice. Mrs. Coretta Scott King was pro-choice. And they would fight to defend the right of a woman to abort her child and other pro-choice positions. So my uncle did not attend the ceremony. I have that over at Priest for Life on the website. I have the program, And I have the picture of Coretta Scott, Mrs. Coretta Scott King, accepting the award, reading a speech that someone else wrote. Uncle Imelda did not write that speech. Aunt Coretta had someone else write it, and she read it. He did not write the thank you letter. It turns out that throughout the years, one of his secretaries, Mrs. Dorothy Cotton, finally admitted after some of his advice column entries in Ebony Magazine. Anybody ever heard of Ebony Magazine? It's an African-American magazine. Well, in the 1950s, my uncle wrote an advice column in Ebony Magazine. And he wrote about, one young lady wrote a letter for advice and says, my boyfriend says that if I love him, I'll have sex with him even though we're not married. What should I do, Dr. King? And he says, well, if a man values you, he will not pressure you with that question. And premarital sex ruins the relationship of marriage. That was his response to that. One of my favorites happens to be a lady was out in public with her child, and the child was kind of misbehaving and acting up. And the mother, honey, don't do that. That's not nice, honey. Don't do that. Don't do that. And so the letter was written, how should a parent discipline his or her child? And he said, that's an odd way to raise a child. If a child does not have discipline when he or she is little, he will never acquire it when he or she grows up. And so I kind of enjoyed that one. And he had several that he wrote. And so that is his tone of voice. Mrs. Cotton, years later, as a matter of fact, it was in this century, said that Dr. King was a little too old-fashioned in his thinking. And so they had the ladies to try to help him out. And so those are the kinds of things that occurred. He never accepted the Margaret Sanger Award. Planned Parenthood used to send people around when I would do my talks, and someone would raise their hand and read the part of the speech. But you know, the most fascinating part of the speech was this. There was a part in the speech that said that the most important thing that men would be concerned about, as a matter of fact, I could probably pull it up. I have my computer is up here. I don't want to paraphrase that one because it's usually at this point I show that particular slide and share it with you. So if you'll bear with me for a moment, I want to read the exact quote. I have MLK and Planned Parenthood, Martin Luther King Jr. and Planned Parenthood. There's a PDF on priestforlife.org at AfricanAmericanOutreach.com. Okay. All right, I'm going to read that particular one. I'll read the statement that they said he wrote in his speech, and then I will read what he said. Okay, this is supposedly part of the speech of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Recently, the subject of Negro family life has received extensive attention. Unfortunately, studies have overemphasized the problem of the Negro male ego and almost entirely ignored the most serious element, Negro migration. So I have 4 sons and 6 grandsons. I know how men talk and how men think. And so men are not going to be happy with thinking that to care about what men think and how they feel and what their egos say. That's not something a man would write or say. That's something that women would say. Men pay too much attention to their ego. We need to see about migration. So I could, you know, as I continued to read the speech, it was very clear that my uncle had not written it. And we did research and found out that they had speech writers for the women's issues, okay? And also, Dr. Margaret Sanger said, she made one other statement in the speech, and I have all this on the screen. I really liked for you to hear my uncle's words, and I put them there on the screen at the same time. So this is in one of his speeches, and he said, and when you discover what you will be in your life, set out to do it as if God Almighty called you at this particular moment in history to do it. Don't just set out to do a good job. Set out to do such a good job that the living, the dead, or the unborn couldn't do it any better. So that's Martin Luther King Jr.'s voice. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so as we listen to words that he spoke from his own personality, his own mouth, from his own Bible, and then we read words that other people attempted to put into his mouth. We begin to discern and kind of find out what Martin Luther King Jr. believed. Now, I received a letter the other day, an email, and it was from a nice African-American woman, and I have tremendous respect for my elders, for all human beings. And so she had written in the letter, "Stop using your uncle's name. You should be ashamed of yourself. Why are you going around saying these things?" And so I actually put a phone number there. I called her back. I said, "Ma'am, I'm really so sorry, and thank you for picking up the phone, and I'm so happy to talk to you." I said, "I'd like to go one by one about some of your concerns. You said I'm using my uncle's name. Well, when I was born in 1951, after my mom and dad had conceived me in 1950, and mother wasn't ready for me to be born, she wanted a DNC. Abortion was illegal. And I said, her mother, they took a flyer from the Birth Control League, and they went to see their pastor. The Birth Control League later, of course, became Planned Parenthood. So they took the flyer, and they went and to see their pastor, Dr. Martin Luther King Sr. Mom and Dad were engaged by now. Mom had been accepted into college, and Dad was already in college. And after they finished college, they were going to get married and raise their family. And so Mom, now understanding that she was pregnant, and she was concerned, and the flyer said, "You know, Negroes should learn to be a credit to their race." They started something. Birth Control League supported a project called the Negro Project. And they were encouraging Negroes, Blacks, African Americans, to be a credit to their race. And so the Negro Project supported sterilization. And that would have been a tubal ligation for the women and vasectomies for the men. And they were saying, "You all don't need to have so many children. You're having too many children. And so stop having so many babies and go to school and become educated." And so the flyers were, "Come and see us at the Birth Control League. And if there are women who have mysterious female ailments, there's a procedure that doctors can do, exploratory, to see what's wrong." Well, that was really a DNC. And my mother, after being allowed to go on a date with my father, she had been courting before that. Courting in those days meant that you could go out and have entertainment, wholesome entertainment and fun, but no sexual intimacy. Dating should have been reserved for married people because they could go home or on a vacation or wherever and become sexually intimate. But they were encouraging the young people not to be in those days. That's hard to imagine, especially if you're under 40. A time when sexual purity was actually encouraged. And so mother was encouraged. She was raised that way. But by now, in 1950, she and dad had been courting, and that's fun without sex, since mama was in the 10th grade. So now she was in college, and her mother kind of says, "Well, you and AD are going to be married one day, and maybe you all could go out on a date. Make sure he wears a rain hat." You're telling your age with the chuckles. That's all right. We get that. Young people, condoms were once called rain hats. That was a name for condoms. Mom had never heard of a condom or a rain hat, and she had never been sexually intimate, anything like this. She was a freshman in college. So they went out on the date, and they were alone, very much in love, and so actually they became sexually intimate. Guess who showed up on the date? You got it? I did, okay? You got that. Biology 101, okay? So now, Mom, and they had a very archaic, and this is the truth too, the way young ladies and men now, if somebody wants to know if there's a pregnancy, you can even go to the dollar store and buy a little kit, and you can take a pregnancy test and find out. They also have something called ovulation kits that you can get for a dollar at the dollar store, and it tells you when a woman is fertile, when she's not. That's a real powerful tool right there for a woman to know when she doesn't have to take a pill, a shot, no surgery, and she can make a decision whether or not she wants to conceive. That's powerful, but that's not too much taught in our society, certainly not in those days. So mother wanted to know with the rabbit test, and this is very archaic because back then they had to take some fluid from the mother in the form of urine, shoot it into a rabbit. If the rabbit died, she was pregnant. Doesn't that sound very ancient? You can look it up online, rabbit test. Okay. very mysterious. Women didn't know what was in their wombs. You know, so it was easy to buy the point. Oh, that's a blob of tissue. That's a lump of flesh. It was easy to buy that. When you were going around killing so many rabbits, it was easy to buy that. So here's mother. She finds out that she's pregnant. She knows she's pregnant. She has the flyer from the Birth Control League that would later become Planned Parenthood. And so she tells her mother. Mama says, no, this doesn't sound right. Let's go and see our pastor. The pastor's name was Dr. Martin Luther King Sr. So Daddy King, that was my grandfather, and mother goes in and they show the flyer and he says, Nene, took his hand, bam, slammed it down on the table. They're lying to you. That's not a lump of flesh. That's my granddaughter. I saw her in a dream 3 years ago. She has bright skin and bright red hair. Now, this honest to goodness, if you get real close, you'll see I'm telling the truth. This is kind of like Miss Clara or something like that, okay? But I was born with strawberry blonde hair and very fair skin. He said, and she's going to bless many people. So I was born, mother and daddy together named me Al after daddy, Vita, Vite. Mama was a French major, and daddy was pretty well learned in languages. Vita, meaning life, Alvita. Alfred and Naomi together giving life to Alvita. Celeste, after my great-grandmother, Jenny Celeste Parks, Mama King's mother. And daddy says, I like Celeste. I want to get you as close to heaven as possible. And then King, of course, that was the family surname. So when people say, you're using your uncle's name, I said, I have a dream. It's in my genes. Granddaddy saw me in a dream and perfectly described me. And I looked just like he said. The fair skin, of course, came from Ireland. Granddaddy's grandfather, Nathan Brannan King, came from Ireland, and he immigrated here. And his son, James, married Granddaddy's mother. So Granddaddy's grandfather was half Irish. His great-grandfather was Irish. Mama King's parents, Willis Williams and his wife, Lucretia, were slaves. They had their son, Adam, and his sister, twin sister Eve, 2 years before Emancipation Proclamation. They had several children. But Adam married a lady who was very progressive, Jenny Parks. And that's where Celeste comes from, Jenny Celeste Parks. So here we have two diasporas, the immigrants from Ireland and the slaves here in America who were set free on Emancipation Day. And Adam, Mama King's daddy, finally recorded that on his birth certificate, Emancipation Day, as his birthday. And then my mother, part Cherokee, her dad, Squire Reese, left before mother was born. And he went to try to get income and everything, being part Cherokee. And he never came back. So I always say to people, so what am I? What race am I? American and even deeper human. One of my favorite movie series, I tell people all the time, so are you. If you're not, you might be Klingon, you might be Andorian. So I have a dream. It's in my genes. I write about that in my book. There are 10, of course, 10 rules and one chapter on tweets, which I'll share with you in a minute, too. Don't forget now, if questions are forming, either about the civil rights movement, the pro-life, any questions. Only thing I'm not going to argue about, am I Republican or Democrat or Tea Party or Independent? Because God is not a Republican. God's not a Democrat. God, to my knowledge, has not joined the Tea Party. Not Independent, because God is Father, Son, and Holy Ghost working together. Okay? So I'm not going to have any political arguments, but any other questions you want to ask, you have to write them down on the card. And at the end of the presentation, which will be shortly, then we'll pull them in and we'll sort them. The only questions that will not be answered are political questions. Are you a Republican, Dr. King? Are you a Democrat? Are you Tea Party or Independent? I'm not going to answer that. So any other question that you want to ask, write it on here. And until the time when they put us out of the room, we'll do everything we can to answer your questions. So anyway, I was allowed to be born. In 1966, Planned Parenthood offered Martin Luther King Jr. the Planned Parenthood Award. His wife accepted it in his stead, much like Mrs. Barbara Bush and Mrs. Laura Bush support the pro-abortion or pro-choice agenda today. Their husbands do not. In 1968, my uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., after I had marched with them, he, my daddy, and others, I marched and went to jail for open housing, for example. And we went down to City Hall and we were protesting for freedom to people, no matter what their skin color were, happened to be, if they could afford the housing to live wherever they wanted. I was arrested during those days. Our home had been bombed in 1963. Martin and Coretta's home was bombed in the 50s. I think it was around 1957. And Daddy's house, A.D. and Naomi, was bombed in 63. Martin and Coretta's house bombed in Montgomery. A.D. and Naomi's house was bombed in Birmingham, Alabama. Daddy's church office, because he pastored in Georgia, he pastored in Alabama, he pastored in Kentucky. His church was bombed in Louisville, Kentucky. You can visit that at the adkingfoundation.com and see the trailer or the whole movie. So I was born into a civil rights family with a civil rights history. Martin Luther King Jr. during those times was making comments, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Don't be like the Romans who committed infanticide. He had a very pro-life dad who was going through life rescuing children from abortion in his congregation and in the community. When women or men had a problem with birthing their children and raising them, he would step in to help. This was a model that he had. So a next question would logically be, Dr. King, how did you become post-abortive? I'll get there. I'm right at that in a moment. So 68, Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. In 69, my dad, his brother, after walking me down the aisle as a virgin, was killed and thrown in our swimming pool. Now, Uncle M.L. Martin Luther King, and A.D. Alfred Daniel Williams King, my dad, were very close, like the Kennedy brothers. Looked alike, sounded alike, preached alike, marched together, went through some of the same types of things. So when Uncle M.L. was killed, Daddy was not allowed to live because you just have him carrying out the same message. He was killed. So here I was married, birthed my first child about 10 months after I was married. And this is one, it's not even a joke, it's the truth, but I always tell this. I told this to the young men over at the preparatory school today. When I was little, honest to goodness, I'm not kidding, I thought I was ugly, unattractive, and all my friends were pretty. And this is why. Because back then we played a game called Spin the Bottle. Anybody ever heard of that? Okay, so you get to go to a party. It was supervised, but somehow the adults would let you do that, and you would spin the bottle. The boys would spin it, or the girls, finally. And if it landed on somebody you liked, you could kiss them like that real quick. Mwah. Nobody wanted to play Spin the Bottle with me. Nobody. And when they would grab the girls at the dance and they'd run around to a corner for a minute and try to steal a kiss, nobody ever tried to steal a kiss. I said, oh, God, maybe my brothers were right. Because when I was born, before my sister was born, I was born with real fair hair, red hair, and bright skin. My brothers were beautiful brown, prettiest color you could ever see. So they'd look at me and ask my mom and daddy, what's wrong with her? And they'd look at me, you're ugly, you're so pale, where did they get you? And until my Aunt Woody told us about the Irish and all that. And so here I am. My sister came out with kind of fair skin and everything. But that happens, you know, throughout our family because you have the different gene pools. So here I am wondering, what's wrong with me? Nobody wants to kiss me. Nobody likes me. So this century, there was a reunion of civil rights workers. And I was one. So we were there, and some of the guys were laughing. They said, girl, you were the prettiest one in the bunch. But your daddy said he had a nonviolent baseball bat. Because, you know, we came up on nonviolence. You weren't violent. You didn't attack anybody. And if we bothered you, he was going to pull it out. And so they laughed about how my daddy protected me. And my uncle, M.L., because he once, I walked in, we would have family gatherings. There's a picture of one of our family gatherings in the book. There are only two pictures in there. And they were in the kitchen laughing. And Uncle M.L. said to Daddy, brother, she's going to be a real pretty girl. We're going to have to watch and run the boys off. And I walked in trying to figure out what they were talking about. So Daddy would send people around to follow me if he couldn't. The deacons are different people. And I'm out walking with a young man or something, and not too far away, be, hey, Deacon so-and-so, what are you doing here? And he did that. So I walked down the aisle virgin, had my first baby. Even though Daddy was gone, we were sad, but it was a new life. And the doctor was a trustee in our church. He's been dead many years. And so I had to go back. So for the 6 weeks checkup, I was fine. I went, you have 6 weeks checkup after the baby. 3 months, I went back to see what was happening. Did I need a rapid test? What's going on? He says, no, let's do this procedure. It's a procedure for a mysterious female ailment. He was a seasoned doctor. He kind of figured out I was pregnant when I didn't know, okay? So he does the DNC locally in his office. That's my second pregnancy. Without explaining, he says, now, don't talk about it to anybody at the church. Don't talk to your family. There's this nice place you go. It's called Planned Parenthood. Go over there and talk to them. They'll give you some things. They'll be your friend. And you don't have to have any children until you're ready. So I went to Planned Parenthood, and I got some pills that gave me a condition called phlebitis, blood clotting issues and things like that, various things. So for the next few years, I'm post-abortive now with this first procedure, second pregnancy, personality changing, and started arguing with my little young husband. We separated, and weight started fluctuating, just all kind of stuff going on. And I'm experimenting with different chemicals and procedures. Had that, it was really, that procedure was a DNC abortion. So 1973, I tried to reconcile with my husband. On January 22nd, my birthday is January 22nd, 1973, a law passed called Roe versus Wade. It made abortion legal in America. A little while later, during that year, I became pregnant. By then, there was no mystery. You knew certain things would happen to your body. You go and try to find out. I'm pregnant. I go to Planned Parenthood for the test, pregnancy, to find out if I was pregnant or not. And the advice was this. The counselor, that you're already having troubles. You're having problems. You don't need another baby. There's a procedure. It's legal. It's called abortion. It's safe. Won't hurt as bad as pulling a tooth. So I went through the procedure. It did hurt worse than getting a tooth pulled, actually. The effects were long-lasting. So here I am, post-abortive, one baby live, two aborted. Damage was now done to my body in these procedures and the chemicals. My pap smear was irregular, different things were happening. Had a miscarriage, because by now I'm divorced and I'm dating. That means sexual intimacy without marriage. And I went to some doctors. And the doctors said, ma'am, have you ever had an abortion? Doctors usually didn't ask that question, then they mostly don't ask it now. And I said, I think so. And I told them some things that had happened. They did some procedures, and repair began on my body. Now, I still didn't change my lifestyle, but they fixed whatever was damage that had been caused. They caused me to have that miscarriage after the two abortions. So I'm dating a young man in the mid-70s. I get pregnant. Know I'm pregnant. Getting ready to go have an abortion. And I said, you know, I'm getting ready to have an abortion. You can give me the money, not give me the money. It doesn't matter, but I'm not ready to have another baby. A woman has a right to choose what she does with her body. And so he looked at me and he said, I'm a medical student. That's not a blob of tissue. That's my child. No, this is an African-American man. No. So I went to talk to my grandfather. I didn't know he had saved me from abortion and all this stuff. I tell him, granted, I'm running down to Planned Parenthood. I'm going to have an abortion. Woman has a right to choose what she does with her body. I'm liberated. I don't want to hear all that old-fashioned talk that you've been talking. He said, honey. Then he slammed his hand just like he did with my mother. Alveda, that is not a lump of flesh. That is my great-grandchild. No. So here, two men telling me no. It's a good thing I listen, because women will say men don't have any right to tell a woman what to do with her body. But guess what the rationale was on that? Civil rights. A woman has a right to choose what she does with her body. The baby's not her body. Okay? I didn't get the rest of the sentence till a little later, but these two men said no. And Granddad said, baby, I'll be here. It's all right. Have a baby. He says, by the way, my daddy had a nonviolent baseball bat. My granddaddy had a shotgun. Nonviolent shotgun. So he said, you all are going to get married. I married that young man, and we had five children together because my body had been repaired from all the damage of the previous behavior. And four of those babies were natural births, you see. So I ended up having six living children, two aborted children, and a miscarried child. And so I went later. Granddaddy was still living. Daddy was gone. Uncle Emil was gone. And 1983, I became born again. I was the mother of three living children now and three children in heaven. Born again in 83. When I became born again, I kept hearing Martin Luther King's words, injustice anywhere, it's a threat to justice everywhere. By then, I had a master's in business. I hadn't gotten earned my earned. I have an earned doctorate in theology, and I have an honorary doctorate in of laws. But I had a master's in business. I was a certified paralegal. I had graduated from Atlanta University with sociology training and substance abuse and things. I had been a state legislator and actress, all this. So here I am, born again, accepting Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior in 1983. I could hear Uncle Emil's words, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Granddaddy's. Woman has the right to choose what she does with her body. Baby's not her body. Biology and science had caught up by then with ultrasounds and all that. When my son was born, who's an attorney today in his 30s, that's the one that Granddaddy stopped me from aborting. He was younger in the ultrasound than the ones who had been aborted and miscarried. So I'm looking at his little picture, and almost, I guess, sort of like a nervous breakdown. Oh, my God, they lied. That's a person. That's a head. That's hands. That's feet. That's a heart beating. 83, I said, Lord, hey, I'm a sinner. You died for my sins, too, not just the world, me. I live in it. It's wrong. Please forgive me. A woman has the right to choose what she does with her body. Baby's not her body. Where's the lawyer for the baby? That's the paralegal. That's the state legislator. That's the niece of Martin Luther King Jr., daughter of A.D., granddaughter of Daddy and Mama King, on and on. So, 31 years ago, I began to ask that question to my law students when I was teaching business law to various people. I used to be very popular. I could go out and make nice money speaking and talking about civil rights, being a member of the King family. But I went to Emory University, and I asked that question. A woman has a right to choose what she does with her body. The baby's not her body. Where's a lawyer for the baby? For many years, that was the last paid invitation I got. Word got around. You don't want to hear what she's got to say. She's the conservative king, the crazy king, the radical king. Call the rest of them. Don't call her. So that went on for several years, late 90s. I met Father Frank Pavone, and I began to do some talks with him. They told me about Rachel's Vineyard, the healing ministry. I went and was healed from my own abortions and wrote a letter to that doctor who had aborted my children and sent me to Planned Parenthood, a letter of forgiveness. My mother, a few years later, Father Frank Pavone and Janet Morana from Priest of Life had come down to some Martin Luther King activities. We were good friends by then. And mother began to tell Janet, I wanted to abort Elvita. I had never really heard the whole testimony till then. And I'm so sorry. So she went on EWTN giving a testimony about why she's so glad I'm here. And so for 9 years, I've been doing this work, finding that college students are the second running neck and neck. African Americans are targeted for genocide by abortion. College students are targeted by Planned Parenthood because you're considered to be an easy mark for free birth controls, easy access to abortion, and et cetera. So I'm finding out all these things that are working against a woman's right to be fertile. Because make no mistake about it, these HHS mandates, drugs that they give you in shots and pills and all that stuff mess with a woman's power, mess with a woman's fertility, mess with a man's destiny and his seed. And I began to boldly proclaim that. Some people don't like to hear it. It upsets people. So then I became finally, I'm 64 over the last 9 years, Mama King. telling the truth and shaming the devil. Now, it's very uncomfortable. Didn't even feel good tonight. All these years, a lady telling me off. Why are you telling all your business? If you're African-American, you have business. Don't you tell our family business. If you're Caucasian, you have secrets. I'm telling the truth. You see there? I know I'm telling the truth. That's true. Don't you tell our secrets. Secret business will make you real, real sick. So I started telling all the secret business. It's not popular. People don't like it. It's not comfortable. I've had people tell me off. It's a disgrace. Who are you telling these things? But I've had so many people, young and old, male and female, every ethnic group, secretly come tell me sometimes, publicly. Thank you for telling that. Because if you're Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, and you can tell it, then I can certainly tell Jesus. I'm glad everybody's not required to do what I do. It's not easy. It's not fun. I would like to come up here and look so perfect and together, and you love me, and I'm so sweet, and I've never done anything right. I'd love to be liked that way. But for every testimony that I give, for everybody who hears it, for everybody who goes and jumps on the internet and sees if I'm telling the truth, and I am, it's worth it. It's worth it. A young man asked me today, he said, well, the world is bad, and in some instances it is, but still a lot of good in it too. And a lot of people are poor, too many people are poor, by the way. So somebody can't afford a baby. You're going to stop them from having a good life by forcing them to have a baby? I said, honey, Jesus fed the poor. He didn't kill them. You see? I said, if abortion was going to stop poverty, God knows we shouldn't have any poor people today, should we? 55 million plus legal abortions in America. If abortion and the harmful birth control things that are linked to breast cancer, cervical cancer, depression, heart attacks and strokes. Because women used to didn't have all that stuff before all this stuff was flooded into the society. If that was going to keep people from being poor, man, y'all can give me a big donation tonight, right? Because we're not poor anymore because we've gotten rid of the problem. What do they call babies? Crumb snatchers? Y'all have heard that before. Useless eaters. Doesn't work like that. When you love people, when you support people, when you help people, pregnancy care centers do a good job. When you help, then society is valued. If you don't value the baby here, or the sick person, or the old person, now that I'm 64, it's real bad to kill old people, okay? I'm old. It's bad. So if you don't value your weakest, then it's easy to stop valuing others. It's easy to mess with the economy. It's easy to crash the economy as long as you can keep enough to hide in your Swiss bank account. You know, all that. Because you don't care about people anymore. Nobody matters but you. So when we think about it this way, and you know, and really quick, because I do want to answer those questions. How's the time? Because I feel like it's hard to tell when I'm kind of just talking. How much time do we have left? Okay, good. I want to run through these real quick because there are 10 rules. And then guess what? If Uncle ML could tweet, it's not only his tweets. I took 140 calories. Calories. Whoa. I think I ate more than 140 calories today. 140 characters or less. So let me, sorry, my voice is a little hoarse too. I've been going in and out of too many climates and time zones. Okay. So in the book, we talk about some of the principles that I've just named. Rule one, make home a priority. It doesn't matter if it's a palace or one room or you're sharing a dorm room. Wherever you live, your home should be a priority. This little tank we walk around in is our home too, earth suit. It's not us, it's just the flesh, but our home. Make home a priority. That means take care of your body, your residence, the place that you live. It should be pretty, comfortable, pleasant to you. Doesn't have to be huge. It could be little. Or it could be huge. It's okay. But making home a priority. I go through several rooms in the birth home where Christine, ML, and AD were born. It's still there today. My parents, when they married, their parents had moved out by there. Mom and Daddy lived there. I lived in the King birth home myself. And you can go in the house, there's the parlor, there's the foyer, there's the parlor, the study, the dining room, the room where the babies were born. But it still has a warm home feeling. Home should always be a priority. And then it goes to serve your family. That's how you learn to serve the community. Not fighting with each other, especially males. And please try not to think that I'm sexist. But my two youngest sons still live with me. And they're always having a contest. I go out on the road. And, well, they move back with me because one just graduated cum laude and one's back in school. And so I'm traveling so much, two of them move back in with me. And I come in and we have an argument about whose time it was to take out the garbage. Now, I take out the garbage, too. It's not a male-female task. But one of them said, well, I took it out yesterday, so it's his turn today. You know, how silly is that? Just take it out. Who, you know? So they can get into arguments over who took out the garbage, you see. But if you're serving each other, I saw my dad and his brother. Never an argument about who could outdo the other. They tried to outdo each other for each other. So we don't have any arguing and squabbling in our home. Serving your family and with the authority of the father and the mother, and if it's only a single mom or a single dad, or if you're being raised by a foster parent or a cousin or a grandparent or sibling, whomever, but respect the authority that's in the home, and then that's the way you learn to get out and serve the community. Get a good education, and that could be public school, private school, church school, home school. But it should be a good education. By taking God out, people can't pray in public school. In some other schools, you cannot pray. So we need a good education, but it needs to have values built into the curriculum. Guard your heart, matters of love and marriage. And a little young man asked me today, well, people are going to have sex without being married. So what are you going to do about it? Start teaching, telling the truth, putting things in order of priority. And it, you know what? If you don't have sex, you won't die. It won't kill you not to have sex for a while. It could kill you to have the sex if you have it with the wrong person and get sick with something that you can't get fixed. You see? So those are things to think about. So guarding your heart, and then you don't have the emotional, physical upheaval with that. Defend life. I've given you the testimony that's in the book. Father Pavone wrote the afterword to the book, and he talks about life and why we should stand up for life. Fight for justice. In the Bible, righteousness and justice come in the same chapter all the time in the same verse. Uncle Emil, I think it's Amos, let righteousness roll down like waters and justice like or as a mighty stream. Righteousness and justice go together. Righteousness is right standing with God. The Bible also says vengeance belongs to God. I will repay. So if we're trying to get revenge, there's a show on TV called Revenge. I've never really looked at it. It's intriguing. It almost catches me every time. But I say, no, because we don't need to be revenging, you see? And so that's why the principles of nonviolence and all that. Now, people say, well, Martin Luther King must not have been a Christian. And when he was young, he studied all the religions of the world. I did in college. And I thought I could be a Buddhist or a Muslim or this or that until I had my own encounter with Jesus Christ. Martin Luther King met Jesus Christ. He writes about it and preached about it in his sermon, A Knock at Midnight. He said he was sitting at his table. He said, Lord, I'm tired. I don't even know if I can keep doing this. And the people are looking for me. Sound like Moses, too, or any man or woman of God, really. And he heard the voice of Jesus say, Martin Luther, stand up for truth, stand up for justice. And lo, I'll never leave you or forsake you. I had to have my encounter with God. It didn't happen to 83. And so I would easily say, wherever, you know, whatever religion, that's fine. And that's kind of, you know, it's okay because God gives everybody a choice. But I finally put it this way after I was born again and it occurred to me. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. So everybody's going to meet God. The atheist, believe it or not, is going to meet God. The Satanist. Everybody is. A creator that is bigger than us. We didn't make ourselves. And we didn't come out of an ocean of energy like some people try to tell us. So my question became this, especially to college students. okay, everybody's going to meet the creator or finally realize they didn't create themselves. So when you run into that creator that created you, and that creator is also a judge, when you get to court, do you want the judge to be your father? It helps if the judge is your father. You're going to get more compassion. Okay, I've got something up here. It's not that. It's just, I don't know. So I'm thinking, as we're going through these exercises and we're looking at justice, don't fight for vengeance. Fight for justice. God's justice is better than human justice. Care for the needy. And I'd like to give this example here. We think a needy is somebody's poor who needs food or shelter. But people need different kind of things. Everybody needs a Lord, believe it or not. But people need different types of things. Rich people need something, believe me. Some people are very wealthy. Can't even think of which, but there were several. And they live in these palaces and mansions, and they keep masks on, and they're scared of germs. Michael Jackson was kind of like that, but a lot of people are. And the money is not consoling them. It's not answering everything. You know, we think of the homeless person, all that, but the rich person can be poor, you see? So caring for the needy. My uncle used to love the parable, Uncle ML, of the Good Samaritan. So we brought it into the 21st century, and I say it this way. Okay, there's somebody laying on the street, and people from the community going up and down the street, they see him. And they say, well, you know, here's the judge. I got to get to court. If I don't rule on this thing, it may go the wrong way. I don't have time. Let somebody else do it. Businessman says, I've got a meeting with some investors, and I got to check on my stocks. Let somebody else do it. The preacher, believe it or not, comes by. Well, got church meeting right now, and if I stop, they won't pay the tithes. I'll miss the money this week. And it goes on and on. Then a man comes by, or it could be a lady, a person comes by with their administrative assistant. And they walking by, and they see this person lying there, and they stop, not even from the community. Yeah, one of the people say, they don't look like they came from this neighborhood. I'm not stopping. So here's this Good Samaritan type of person that says to their assistant, look, here's a couple of my credit cards. This is all the money I got on me. You stay here and help this person. Get them stable. Take them somewhere. And when I get back in town, we'll see if the person needs any more. So what my uncle said, and it made so much sense, it's not that I should be so concerned even about what would happen to this man or lady if I don't help. What would happen to me in my heart if I turn away, you see? So caring for the needy, people need all kinds of things. And we can help, and we can give. Work for peace. And I wrote a little poem. Let me see if I can find it. When I was working on that one, and I had a real good editor who was helping me with this, but a couple of my poems appear in here, in that particular one, I sent it back. And I said, no, we got to put this in there. Let's see if I put it in there. I think I did. Yeah, here it is, peace. Tell you what about peace. How about I give you a piece of my mind? Never mind that there's not enough of your mind to spare. Who can afford to give such a piece away? Now, peace of mind is something altogether different, as in war and peace. People go to war to find peace. Does that make sense? Especially since there's a peace that passes all understanding, which, by the way, is ours for the asking. If only we agree to agape love one another. Now, that's a piece of a puzzle, isn't it? Peace out. So I'm sitting there rioting, and it came to me, you know. So we fight for justice. We work for peace. We build the beloved community where everybody's accepted. Now, all human beings have issues. Nobody's perfect. Everybody's got something. That's why Jesus had the brilliance of mind to say the woman caught in the act. This woman's in here doing adultery, fornication, whatever she was doing, and she needs to be stoned. And basically, Jesus' indication, well, the law did say she had to be stoned. He said, okay, yeah, you're right. Get your rocks. Come on, get them. Then he turns around and looks. Goes, oh, yeah, Then he said, hey, ye without sin, cast the first stone. And their revelation of their sins obviously flooded through them. One by one, they dropped the stone, they left. And then the woman, Jesus said, woman, where are your accusers? They're not here. He said, so go and sin no more. But in our world today, whatever it is, I'll tell you one of my sins. I've had many, the abortions, the adultery, divorces, things. You know, God forgave me. I'm healed. That's why it's easy for me to talk about, because she's dead. The woman that did all that stuff is dead. She doesn't exist. Now, it's one little problem that keeps trying to raise its head. Kind of gluttony and all that. I had gotten up to 316 pounds. I was totally denying the whole issue. I've lost a few pounds now. I'm fighting to keep going down the other way. So my kids kept saying, Mom, just look in the mirror. God, look in the mirror, please. Clothes a little tighter. I'm saying, what's wrong with this? It must have shrunk in the washer and dryer, you know. I wasn't admitting anything. But my son looked at me one day. He said, you really don't want to lose weight. I said, yes, I do. He said, you're not really trying. So I made the adjustment. Because the Bible says gluttons won't make it to heaven. Now, all fat people are not glutton, and all skinny people are not innocent. Because there are some people who can eat five times literally more than I eat. Because their metabolism burns it off. You see? But I had to face my own reality with that. Then I'm very stubborn. That's probably what's wrong with my voice now that I think about it, too. Because I still think sleep is a waste of time. Because I have so much to do. So I will, if I don't make myself go to sleep, which I lay down, I really will go to sleep. But I have so much other stuff to do, I don't want to go to sleep. And then when I'm dragging, can't walk, eyes looking like, you know. So I have to go to sleep. Now, I've done a lot of worse things than overeating and not going to sleep. But those are trying to creep back. And then this one, I don't even know why I'm about to tell this one, but I am. And people say, why do you do that? People will never respect you again. Okay, I like to go to the movies. So when you go to the movies, they say no outside food in the movie. You all know that, right? I did this the other day. I'm a preacher. I love the Lord, and I'm trying to live right. So I knew I have a temptation about all the popcorn and stuff, so I went and got a smoothie, a green smoothie. It was about that much of it left. So I stuck it down because that was going to hold me, so I didn't want the popcorn, the candy, the nachos, all this. So I stuck it in my purse. I'm forgetting. I'm up here at the lady, got the ticket. I give her the ticket, and I just took a little sip out of my smoothie. So the sweet little girl, she says, ma'am, you know the policy. There's no outside food in the theater. I said, oh, it's just water, honey. I straight out lied. Flat out lied. And this was not long ago. I get in the theater. I sit down. I'm so happy. I'm going to finish my little smoothie. I had not bought all the concessions. I'm sitting there. It's like the Holy Spirit or an angel or something. That's not water. It's almost like a voice up, that's not water. I said, okay, God, really? Okay. I say, seriously? That's not water. I get my purse, go back out with a smoothie tucked in there, go to the young lady. Ma'am, yes. I say, didn't you tell me when I came in that I would have to throw that away? Yes. I say, didn't I tell you this was water? Yes, ma'am. Young lady, this is not water. I forgive you, ma'am. I forgive you. I forgive you. I said, let me tell you, it's just about gone now. I finished it. I said, I'm going to go over here and buy some popcorn. I bought plain popcorn. So I didn't break their rule. Now, that really did just happen to me. To you, that sounds like some of you, maybe nothing. But that just meant my conscience wasn't dead. I couldn't just lie and think it was okay. Because you tell one lie, two, by the time you get to five, six is easy. You don't bat an eye. And that's how Granddaddy called it, and I'm really finished. Now, you write your questions. We'll be picking them up. Can y'all get in the aisles while I tell this last one? Granddaddy used to tell a story about nibbling sweet grass. And it was a little sheep that was a pet to his master. And the master grew corn and vegetables and things on his farm. And he would tell the little sheep, he'd say, now that's Farmer Joe over there, and he slaughters, he makes lamb chops. So you stay over here on our side of the fence, because he's not going to come over here. So the little sheep, and they had beautiful grass. It was pretty green grass. And little sheep would nibble and enjoy the grass. One day, little sheep finds a little place under there where he could get his little nose under and eat the grass from Farmer Lamb Chops, right? One day, he's nibbling sweet grass because the grass looked better over there. So one day, little sheep ends up all the way over there in his history. Little sheep became a lamb chop. So granddaddy said, you start nibbling, just nibbling a little bit, and you leave the fold where you're loved and protected and covered, then you find yourself over in a place that's difficult. So those are the kinds of things that we have to kind of think about, especially all this foolishness. I told this one today, too, and it really did happen. All this movies and music and things that say, I want to look at this on your body, I want to do that. And my sons, one day, were playing that mess, and I came in the house because I told them they can't play that stuff in my house. And they're playing it. I say, let me look at your this or that. And I had on this outfit. I had just come in from the road going like this. I say, so let me let you look at this. They were like, no, no, ah. I was not about to do that, but they didn't know it. I said, well, if that's so abhorrent, can you see how stupid it is listening to that stuff? Turn it off. Don't play it in my house. And so I have to do dramatic things sometimes to make these points. And so my uncle and daddy were more serious, although you can hear some of the joking in what I say. But in the last one, if Uncle Emil could tweet, I just want to share a couple of those as we collect the questions. You can start bringing them up. We are all one human race destined for greatness. Let us live together in peace and love in a beloved community. This is straight out the Bible. Have faith in God. God is love. Love never fails. It is our prayer that we may be children of light, the kind of people for whose coming and ministry the world is awaiting. And I say this to college students, high school students, you're not leaders of tomorrow. You're leaders now. You're young leaders. But you are. You start with leading yourself. And then you let that kind of move on into your greater destiny. God bless everybody.
You've been listening to a lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. In celebration of Martin Luther King Day, we've heard a talk by Alveda King, the niece of Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., Pastoral Associate and Director of African American Outreach for Priests for Life and Gospel of Life Ministries, the voice of Silent No More Awareness Campaign, and author of several books, including King Rules, 10 Truths for You, Your Family, and Our Nation to Prosper, How Can the Dream Survive If We Murder the Children?, and I Don't Want Your Men, I Want My Own. Dr. King's appearance was co-sponsored by Creighton University Students for Life. She spoke on the topic, How Can the Dream Survive? This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday evening, October 27, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Cindy Workman, Associate Director of Public Relations, and Dr. Ed Simone, Professor of Pharmacy at Creighton University, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.